Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the program. And yes, Tom got the memo. I've got a yellow polo shirt on, and so does Tom today. It's now the official polo of the Buckmaster Show.
It's a very summery kind of look.
It is a summery look, and I haven't worn a yellow polo since my days at the University of Arizona, so I thought, you know, I'm going to try something new. Put a little color, and I feel good wearing it. It must be something about yellow being a happy color, Tom.
So what is old is new today.
There you go. 100 degrees maybe today. They're saying it looks pretty good for our first 100-degree day. It's the 11th year here on the radio on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station is 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Today is Thursday. It's the 13th of May 2021. The website is buckmastershow.com for our live stream. We take the piggyback feed where it's 24/7 all the time of all of our programming on kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get right into our first newsmaker interview. Pima County Supervisor Democrat Rex Scott, Supervisorial District Number 1, is with me in studio. This is the first time I've seen Supervisor Studio in studio since back in the when he was running for election. We had a little debate or a candidate forum here in studio, so it's been a while. Great to see you again.
Good to be here, and I'm glad my green shirt
matches
well
green.
With you and Tom's yellow.
There you go. Big news today from the Centers for Disease Control on mask requirements. They are now saying that basically vaccinated people can pretty much do what they want as far as except wearing a mask in a healthcare setting, mass transit on a bus or a plane. In an airport or a bus station, you have to wear a mask if you're in prison, visiting prison, I guess, or jails or homeless shelters. So, Rex Scott, I wonder at your meeting coming up, you've got a meeting on Tuesday, what the guidance now will be for the Pima County mask law, which has been law since December of 2020. Could you foresee changes now with that?
I think that is entirely possible. I think it's also the update from the CDC, an encouragement for more people to get vaccinated, because again, this update just deals with vaccinated people. The Pima County mask mandate is intended to stay in place until we reach a level of minimal transmission of the COVID-19 virus in our community. That's really the basis. That concern for public health that led the previous board to enact it and the current board to support it. But I do agree that this update from the CDC certainly should prompt some kind of update to the board from our health department and perhaps some discussion among my colleagues.
It's possible, and of course we can't speak for your health department, but it's possible they may decide that it would be up to every individual business in Pima County to continue with the mask ordinance.
It's possible, but we would still have because we are not at a level of minimal transmission for the virus, we would still have concern for people who are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still a significant proportion of our community. So, again, this is welcome news. It's exciting news. It shows the benefits of being vaccinated. And I certainly think it will lead to some discussion on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I've got an email here from a listener who asked the question, and I think it's a good one. Will the new CDC mask guidance cause confusion or even more confusion? And I know that probably the most calls that you get at the District 1 office has to do with the mask requirement, doesn't it?
It is certainly
right up there in the
it is certainly
the top
right
three
up there
or whatever.
Absolutely.
So I think this is a good question that this listener is asking about, you know, is this going to cause now more confusion?
I think it has every possibility of doing that, Bill, because if you walk into a business or any public accommodation without a mask and you say, hey, I'm fully vaccinated,
right,
how does the person who's operating that business or a public accommodation know that? Mm-hmm. So again, our biggest concern is making sure that the virus is not transmitted to people who are still susceptible to catching it. That'll be the basis for any discussion that we have Tuesday or moving forward.
But I think we can summarize right here that just because the CDC has issued this guidance, that does not mean that suddenly the Pima County mask law is now invalid.
It does not mean that, no.
Let's talk a little bit about one of your real big wins early on in your supervisorial career here in Pima County, and that has to do with early childhood education. This is an issue that you talked about as you were running in District 1, and now you have Pima County going ahead with some early childhood education for perhaps, what are we talking about, maybe 1,000 young people?
It will actually be right around 1,200, because beyond the fact that we're going to be able to directly assist a little over 1,000 students who are not currently enrolled in a high-quality early childhood education program, we're also going to be able to help a little more than 200 children who are currently enrolled in half-time Head Start programs. We will be able to permit them to go to full-time now.
People need to be, I think a lot of there's confusion about this, about where how the funding is working and the partners that you have with this. Could you articulate that in a very simple manner on how this is working,
Certainly.
How it will work?
Certainly. If you look at who provides early childhood education, that's predominantly provided by school districts and certain private sector or nonprofit providers. These scholarships provide the full cost of a year of in an early childhood program to families whose income is at 200% of the federal poverty level or below. And what this is able to do allows those school districts and other early childhood providers to expand their programs and offer those opportunities to more children than they were before. And education is really the greatest change agent in anybody's life. There is ample research on brain development and kindergarten readiness that speaks to the benefits, not just short-term, but long-term of being involved in a quality early childhood education program. And what we are expressing as county government is that income, family income, should not be a barrier to that opportunity. If you have more than one kid in early childhood, sometimes even one kid, the cost of that can be one of your greatest monthly expenses, perhaps commensurate with your rent or mortgage. And there are some families who just do not have the capacity to take on that expense. Therefore, their kids, when they start kindergarten, are at a disadvantage compared to their peers. And we want to remove that disadvantage and really help to enhance their potential as learners and as students moving forward.
How many hours a day are we talking about for the child?
It would be at least six.
Okay. All right. We have a call from John has called us on the live line, 790-2040, 790-2040. A question for Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Go ahead, John.
Mr. Supervisor Scott mentioned minimal transmission. What does that mean?
John, thank you for that question. Minimal transmission refers to when you have more than 2 weeks of right at or less than 10 per 100,000 cases in the community. That's minimal transmission as defined by the Centers for Disease Control.
So that's the daily we've seen in the paper. There's the daily case count that we've been having.
We're looking at the weekly case count.
The weekly case
yes,
count.
Sir.
And it has been going down. There's no
yes,
doubt about it.
No question about it.
Yesterday was actually a zero day, but I don't know if that was an accounting anomaly. It's been anywhere, my guess is 40 to maybe 100 cases a day. So it has been going down. But you're saying that the benchmark would be about, on the weekly basis, 10 cases.
10 per 100,000 of population.
All right. Let's take a break right here with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, you know I'm going to talk about my favorite bakery right now.
Which is a District 1 business, I'd like to point out.
It certainly is. Mona's Danish Bakery. They're open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stop by, find out what all the excitement's about, and I can tell you that you're going to... The excitement is about outstanding, a variety of beautifully prepared breads and pastries, especially the Danish Kringle, light and tasty, a mouth-watering pastry. My favorite filling with the Kringle would be almond, but perhaps you would like the raspberry or blueberry. They've got you covered up there. Also, I've gone back to enjoying the almond croissants. Had one on Saturday up at Mona's, and I'll tell you, that baby had its own zip code. I don't know if Steve, owner and chief baker, has gotten, he's a generous guy anyway, but this was a big croissant, and it was beautifully done, very moist and tasty. Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now. The website, monasdanishbakery.com. Stop in and say hello to the team up there. And by the way, if you're looking for a job, it'd be a great place to work. They do have the Help Wanted sign out. We'll be right back.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, the chief is going to be with us. Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan will be with us, and there's a lot to talk about as we get into the wildfire season. Unfortunately, we've had pretty much zero rain, maybe about an inch of rain. So we're looking at a very difficult time. I hope it's not like last June, of course, as the Catalinas were burning, it seems, from one end to the other. Supervisors in Pima County have voted to oppose the Tucson Water proposal for differential water fees. Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 1, Rex Scott, is with us. We continue our conversation with Supervisor Scott. This is a tough issue. We had Paul Cunningham, Supervisor Scott, with us again for his monthly visit on the program yesterday. I got the feeling from Paul, yes, there will be the public hearings. I think he said there would be two. There's going to be informational meetings. But I get the kind of the gut feeling this is a done deal, and we are looking at some kind of an increase for those of us that live in District 1, myself included, that increase could be, Paul was saying, 5 to 10%. Now, could it be 5 to 10% for the first year and then go up again? A lot of people, my neighbors for sure, are concerned about this.
Well, they should be, because the mayor and council voted unanimously to issue a notice of intent that they were going to impose higher water rates on residents of unincorporated Pima County up to 50%. And it's possible that they may look at increments on an annual basis, but they did say the night that they voted for that they could go up to 50% in terms of a surcharge on people who live in unincorporated Pima County. And a lot of those people live in our district, as you already indicated, Bill. That's why I sponsored the resolution that the Board of Supervisors passed opposing this policy. There is no cost-based rationale for it. Tucson Water has said that on more than one occasion. All of us pay for the delivery of CAP water to our region, and the City of Tucson gets the preponderance of our residential and industrial CAP allocation, because when they set up a water service area to justify that allocation, that water service area goes as far north as the village of Catalina and as far south as Corona de Tucson. They have already said that there is no additional cost to provide water to people who live in unincorporated county. They haven't asked for additional money in the 40 years that they've been getting that CAP allocation. And they started off by saying that this was a way of inducing either annexation or incorporation. Now they're soft pedaling that and talking more about impacts on the general fund to water service in the unincorporated area. But they forget that their biggest source of revenue is the sales tax. And we have data from the Eller College at the U of A that indicates that residents of unincorporated Pima County provide more than a third of the sales tax proceeds in any jurisdiction that that charges a sales tax, not just the city of Tucson, but also Oro Valley or Marana or South Tucson. So there's this rhetoric that the residents of unincorporated Pima County are getting some kind of free ride, and now they're all of a sudden being asked to pay for it. The facts
after
do
40,
not
40 years.
Exactly. And the facts don't justify that position. So I hope that the mayor and council will listen to what I'm sure they're already hearing from my constituents and others who are affected by this, and that they will rethink what they voted unanimously to do a few weeks ago, but it certainly doesn't look promising.
Now, two of your colleagues on the 5-member board of Pima County Supervisors decided to vote no. The vote opposing the differential water fees was a 3-2 vote. The two supervisors, Adelita Grijalva and Dr. Matt Hines, voting against the resolution because, from what I understand, this differential water fees would then, for low-income people, there would be some kind of a benefit for being part of this.
I think that was one of the reasons that was cited by one of my colleagues, and I certainly don't ever want to speak for another member of the board in an interview like this one. But to me, regardless of the composition of your district, this is an example of a public utility that is going beyond the cost of service model to generate additional revenue from people who have no recourse against the people who are voting to increase their costs. And I think because we, as the county, have been operating under a cost of service model in terms of being the regional sewer provider, all of my colleagues should be concerned with the city of Tucson that is, even if they're saying they're not the regional water provider, they have been providing water to most of the region, and now they're going beyond what has been the cost of service model they've followed for over 40 years.
Let's talk a little bit about transportation in the remaining time here.
Sure.
You are now the representative on the Regional Transportation Authority Board. There is a designated representative from each of the jurisdictions in Pima County, including the Tribal Nations. The First Nation people have a representative as well. The reauthorization of the RTA, and we had Farhad Mughimi on the program on Friday talking about this, we're 3/4 in. The program is now got about a quarter left. It's a 20-year program. The anniversary of it is actually this week, right, of the authorization. How important is a reauthorization, Rex Scott?
Bill, it is absolutely vital. There are things that we can do as a region working collaboratively that no one jurisdiction can do all their own. And the accomplishments of the first RTA plan, started in 2006, as you indicated, is going to expire in 2026. I would hope that those accomplishments and also the potential for what we can achieve as a region between 2026 and 2046, which would be the span of time that an RTA next would cover, will be inducement for the public to support the plan. But we need to work together as the Pima Association of Governments Regional Council and the RTA board to support the Citizens Advisory Committee so that they can work together to put together a plan that we can approve and all of us, all the representatives of every jurisdiction, can send before the voters with confidence.
And it's very important, isn't it, that, and I know that Farhad Mughimi is very open and transparent to this, and this board that's, or this committee that's now listening to folks about what they want to see in the 20-year plan, these voices have to be listened to.
They absolutely do. And it's important also that we recognize that the next plan unlike the first plan, can't just be looking at roadway expansion.
Maintenance has to be in there.
Maintenance has to be in there, and so does attention to transit and multimodal transportation, including pedestrians and bicycles. The world is different now than it was in 2006, and it's going to continue to evolve between 2026 and 2046. So we can't just be looking at roadway expansion as one way of dealing with a multifaceted regional transportation plan.
All right. Before we let you go, you have a staff of three people. And how do folks that are in District 1 contact your staff, contact you and the staff, and quickly go over the four items you hear the most, the general areas that you're hearing most from constituents?
Certainly. The four departments that we usually have to turn to for assistance with constituent concerns are the Health Department, Transportation Department, Natural Resources, Parks and Recreation Department, and the Development Services Department. Anybody who needs our assistance can call us at 724-2738.
And they will get a call back?
Yeah, absolutely they will. Or they can email us at district1, that's the number one, at pima.gov.
All right. Rex Scott, thank you very much. We'll look forward to your visit with us next month. Good to have you back in studio with us.
Bill, great to be here. Thanks so much.
All right. Coming up next, Robert Hendricks, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who got the memo. I can't believe it. He's got the yellow shirt. I've got the yellow polo. And Tom Fairbanks has his yellow polo on as well. And the green that Rex is wearing, it complements the yellow. So.
Superintendent when I was a teacher moving here from Ohio. My first job was in Flowing Wells, and he was my boss. So
wow.
Can't wait to say hello to him.
You're going to get a chance to say hello to him right now. We'll take our break right now.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. A modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. I am so blessed to have such a great lineup of sponsors. Green Things, they do such a beautiful job. And I've talked about this on the radio, but it is so true that when you go to a nursery, a gardening center like Green Things, you basically have some questions about, I want something that's going to survive our very hot summer, and I'd like some color or whatever in the garden. The people at Green Things can steer you in the right direction. We're looking at 100 degrees this week, so certainly summer is upon us. An extraordinary area there of plants, trees, annuals, and more. They're open daily on their 13-acre site. And while you're there, stop by Zocalo Village. You will be very impressed when you see some of that handmade furniture, these beautiful mesquite tables. Some of them are carved right here in Tucson. Some of them are from Mexico, but they are beautifully rendered. And there's chairs that will match the set. It's just some beautiful pieces of furniture at Zocalo Village. Here are the websites, greenthingsaz.com, and they're at 3384 East River Road, and zocalovillage.com. Zocalo as part there as part of the property, on the property at Green Things. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With us in studio, our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. He was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. Bob, how are you?
Good, Bill.
And we had a little reunion here in the studio. Did you hire Rex Scott to come out here from Ohio? How did that work?
I actually did.
You did
hire him? I
did,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Well, you know, he was a great find. He was one of these teachers that, as you can probably tell, any job that he takes, he's jumps in with both feet. He's very enthusiastic and great commitment to the school, great commitment to kids, great commitment to the community. Just a fabulous, fabulous guy. And his wife at that time, who was a teacher in the district, he met and they're working at different schools.
You are kind of the matchmaker, I think.
A little bit to do with that too. It's a great couple, and I'm just very happy that he's moved from one
education,
career in education
now to public service.
Now another role in public service, and I wish him well.
How are we doing 1 year and 3 months or whatever into the pandemic? This has been a year that will be talked about, obviously, in the history books. But you look at how education has, I think, taken a terrible hit. I exaggerating with a terrible hit there?
No, it was a terrible hit. And I have to tell you, I saw a glimmer of optimism this week. I visited two elementary schools.
Really?
In Tucson. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, all the teachers are back to work.
Really?
They were all vaccinated. And the classes,
what was the mood like?
Very upbeat. Mm. Classes were in full operation. Every child was wearing a mask. Despite my concerns about how that was going to work. You know, several teachers told me that children are very adaptable, and when they learn that that's what's an expectation, they do it. Things were carefully monitored in the hallways, in the restrooms. I felt very upbeat about it. And there was a story that one of the teachers told me about the fact that her classroom had been, for the entire year, on the video matrix, you know, on the Zoom.
Yeah, oh yeah, the virtual thing, yeah.
The first day that the kids came back to school, it was like, I know you, but I only know you from the video.
Oh.
We forget that their only relationship was through Zoom.
Yeah.
So she said that first day, that first moment, when kids found each other, because they, you know, it was a whole new class. Remember,
right.
They
sure.
They, it wasn't like they were in a class and then they were disrupted. Had to come back again. It was that way, and so the children were very, very excited about seeing each other and saying, I recognize you from the video picture, and things got back to normal very, very quickly. And there's also a great push for schools to continue with summer schooling for those parents who want that. They're encouraging parents to continue. There's federal funding to allow that to happen, so there wouldn't be any situation where a parent could be denied a child for tuition-free.
Is funding certainly there. I mean,
it's
TUSD
there.
Got a lot of money for that.
So that summer school experience, that catch-up experience is there for kids if they want it. There's daycare available, and so and meals. And so let's look at this summer as maybe an extension of what wasn't, and then segue into April, into August, and then have a full start of school in the fall with hopefully everybody back. You know, there's really, when you look at it nationally, as of last week, U.S. Department of Education is saying only 54% of children nationwide are back into full school learning. Now, there is a population.
Half of the United States, the kids are not.
They're not. And that's a sharp contrast to Pima County, where you know, most school districts are open. They're open full time. There's about a 25% group of children that are still learning remotely, and school districts are making the accommodation for that. I mean, my prediction is going to be that maybe parents are waiting until the beginning of next year because they feel like this next 2 months or a month and a half are not going to be enough to really make it worthwhile to make that transition. Maybe they settled into some kind of routine. But I think after summer, we're going to be back to normal, at least the new normal. Things are still going to be different, but, you know, we don't know about masks. The CDC today announced
big news
that something's going to be a little different about masks. And but this holdback of schools that have not opened, and a lot of them are on the East Coast.
Really?
And then some on the West, you know, some of that has been suggested that that's partly union pressure.
What is the impact of unions on this, do you think?
Well,
how about on Arizona teachers? Let's start there.
Very little, because Arizona is a right-to-work state.
Yep.
And as a right-to-work state, essentially, teachers are not obligated to belong to a union, and therefore, many do not. However, the other part of that is that if you don't belong to a union in Arizona, you still get the same benefits.
Really?
Yes. So if, for example,
so what's the
advantage union agrees
of, what's the advantage of being a union member if you're going to get the same
well,
bennies?
Well, if I were selling it, I would say camaraderie.
Oh.
Maybe a united front or something.
Okay.
But
But basically, from what I'm hearing you say, teacher unions are not as strong in Arizona as many places in the United States.
They're not. And of the two major unions, mm-hmm. or what they would prefer to call themselves as organizations, mm-hmm. what the two major ones are the NEA and the AFT. Now, National Education Association is three times larger than the AFT, In terms of Arizona, most of the union presence is NEA. The AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, which is an affiliate of the AFL-CIO,
right.
is not very present in the state of Arizona. However, you will find its presence in the large city schools. And this is where we're hearing all the pushback is from AFT in Chicago and San Francisco and Philadelphia, New York, and Los Angeles. They're saying, well, we can't put our teachers back into the classroom yet. It's not safe. There are a lot of conditions. Well, from my perspective, these are conditions that might be present themselves, whether it was a COVID, quote, opportunity,
yes.
or another opportunity.
Another opportunity, right.
So they're pushing that. And I just heard on the radio prior to opening mm-hmm. the door of the car today mm-hmm. that the AFT has changed their position.
Really?
And they are now saying, as of today, that they don't think there should be any roadblocks to allowing teachers to go back into the classroom, mm. that they're fully supportive of that. Mm. And so I don't know why the sea change in their attitude, but we do know, and there's this backstory of the NEA and the AFT who contribute generously to the Biden administration, to any Democrat campaign. Mm-hmm. And so there is a perceived cozy relationship mm-hmm. between these two associations. And also there has been an inference that they have a cozy relationship with the CDC. I don't really believe that. Mm-hmm. The suggestion was that the CDC leaned on them heavily for advice when they were writing their guidelines. Well, there were about 50 agencies or organizations that were at the table to talk about that,
yeah.
Them being among them. But mm-hmm. It's an interesting story.
All right. Robert Hendricks sticks around with us for another segment. If you'd like to join our conversation, 790-2040, 790-2040. We'll take our break right here on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I'm so excited that Silver City and Tourism is back in New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over there. Just contacted by a listener over the weekend asking about where to go and what to do. And I steered the listener to the website that we talk about every day on the show, and that is southwestnewmexico.org. One of the big selling points this time of year as we approach 100 degrees, and I'm not saying we're going to hit 100 today, but we're going to be certainly in the neighborhood, it is the cooler weather in Silver City. Look at the temperatures, 79 right now at the midday, and Tom Fairbanks just brought up the screen showing 80 degrees. For the weekend. Now that's beautiful weather, and the mile high elevation of anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 feet. So you get 80 degrees in the daytime. Look at the nighttime lows, around mid to upper 40s. So that is just a perfect late spring weather. So again, check it out. Just a 3-hour drive from Tucson to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. We continue with our conversation with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education. He is a Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education. Sandra has called us at 790-2040. Dr. Hendricks, slip on your headset there so sure. You will be able to hear Sandra's question. Go ahead, Sandra.
Good afternoon, Dr. Hendricks.
Hi, Sandra.
As a retired teacher, I have a question for you. I've been hearing a lot that teachers in Arizona are not getting the same amount of money that they did last year on their contracts. What's the reasoning behind that?
You know, Sandra, I have not heard that. I don't know if that's a district by district decision, because every district has the opportunity to raise or to hold salaries at a particular level. I do know that there's some reluctance on the part of school districts to be overly generous, if you will, with salary increases, because the governor has held back some of the money that normally districts would receive because of remote learning. You don't get the same formula contribution to your budget with remote learners as you do for in-person learning. So there may be some reluctance there, but as to the specific response to your question, I'm not aware that there has been a change in salary increases.
Thank you, Sandra, for giving us a call. Now, you mentioned that in Pima County, about 25% of the students, the parents have decided for whatever reason to keep the students in a virtual environment. Do you think in the fall we will still have that as like a hybrid system, that there is going to be a virtual component? Could you see that happening?
I think, Bill, eventually it's going to phase out.
Okay.
I think there's going to be certainly a niche for virtual schooling. I mean, we've seen it. It's growing in popularity in the state of California. Other states have actually chartered virtual schools, and in some cases, states have chartered virtual schools. So I think there's always going to be that segment, but I'm a little doubtful that local districts are going to continue to offer that option. If students want that, if their parents want that, they may have to go to another avenue. But, you know, I could be wrong about that. It kind of depends on, what's the demand? If there's a demand for that and a school district realizes that this is a way to sustain their enrollment, that could be a market force to continue to stay in that business. So I don't know. I think it's going to disappear. But again, if it remains popular and if parents want to be associated with that school district, then maybe that district will continue it.
Do you think we're going to see research showing a big drop-off in the learning curve during the COVID year? I'm sure people in your industry, the education industry, have been watching that COVID year very closely. I'm sure there's research that's being done that will probably see that research, the results of it.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt there's going to be issues of retention. Which is simply recalling everything that you knew in addition to what you should have learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got those two forces at work, and particularly for minority students, I think we're going to see major issues in learning. One of the pushes for currently testing students is to really get some kind of a feel for benchmarking where students are. There was a suggestion in the previous administration that those tests be put on hold. Biden administration is suggesting that we come forward with some kind of testing to know what, with some standardized scores, we have to deal with. So It definitely is a problem. And particularly when you look nationally at the ethnic breakdown of students who are not returning to the classroom full time. You know, if you look at the, for example, the African American population, there's a large group, a predominant group, that are not back in the classroom yet. And whether they will be convinced to come back in the classroom in the fall, I don't know. But it's a major decision that we need to support them in making, because that particular population, it has some learning deficits that we have to work with.
When I was in high school, we had the ACT and the SAT, and I took both of them. Are those still around, the ACT?
They are.
They are?
They are.
But high school seniors during the COVID year apparently didn't have to take them.
They did not.
So colleges didn't really have a feel for where they are on their...
There's we've talked about this before, but there's great controversy about whether colleges even want those scores anymore, that's really a determiner of success.
Yeah, maybe not.
No.
All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Bob, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you.
Good to be here. I'm heading to Green's Things right now.
Are you?
Yes,
really?
I am.
Good.
Okay.
Tell Jan and Jack, the owners, hello, and we're glad you're headed over there. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. The fire chief is with us tomorrow, Chuck Ryan. On behalf of Dr. Robert Hendricks, Tom Farrell. It's the Hendricks, two brothers, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great day.